are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.
Okay, I think what I would change after talking to many, many teachers is the mindset that it is okay to do professional development partly in their free time.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This is Holly, editor at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. The 2018 anniversary of the centenary of some women winning the right to vote in the UK inspired us to launch the 100 Women podcast series, in which we are interviewing 100 women working in the field of education or in the public eye in order to catalogue their lives, celebrate their successes, discuss the challenges they face, and discover what they would like to pass on to the next generation. This week, listen to Ross McGill interview Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel, lecturer in psychology at the University of Dundee. Find out about her involvement in the Learning Scientist and the free resources they provide for teachers. How unfair she thinks it is that teachers have to attend professional development in their spare time. And her involvement in supporting women in academia to navigate the still very frequent differential treatment they experience because of their gender.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am home in Dundee and I am at the University of Dundee in the psychology department with Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Cooper-Tetzel, that's right.
Great. So could you introduce yourself to listeners, Carolina, and tell us what you do?
Hello, hi. Yeah, my name is Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel and I'm a lecturer in psychology. I did my PhD in cognitive psychology at the University in Mannheim, which is in Germany. And then I did postdocs in Toronto and in St. Louis before coming here to beautiful, bonnie Scotland. Today it's a little rainy, but yeah. And now I'm a lecturer in psychology and main focus of my work is to teach. But also to communicate science to the broader audience.
So what does your regular working week or day look like?
So a regular day would be to prepare my teaching, my lectures, and to teach them, but also to write blog posts, for example, for the Learning Scientist. I'm a member of the Learning Scientist, so I do that. And recently I started the Teaching Innovation and Learning Enhancement Network, TILE Network, here at the University of Dundee, where I try to connect teachers and researchers and policymakers with each other to discuss ways to improve education.
And you're doing a great job, because I'm here taking part in that later. But for listeners, I've followed the Learning Scientist since started in 2016.
Yeah, the Learning Scientist project started in 2016. It started and was founded by Jana Weinstein and by Megan Nausumaraki, back then Megan Smith. And they started this out of the interest to help out students to study better. And so they connected on Twitter and said, okay, this is something that hasn't been done before, so let's do a Twitter account, call it AZTest, and start helping out students. And as you maybe know now, this is a big outreach project involving many other researchers, having weekly blog posts. We have resources such as PowerPoint presentations on effective learning strategies, but also a podcast, also little videos, bookmarks and everything that is freely available for teachers and students to use to improve their
learning. And I've used them personally in my field of work as a school leader and as a researcher or a blogger. And for me personally, thank you, they've been amazing. And having observed how people are sharing those ideas on Twitter over the last 2 years, I think your reach has been amazing. So thank you from me to you and the rest of your team.
Thank you.
Could you just describe your education background, you know, your time at school, high school yourself, and how it's led you to into the university?
Yeah, so I did all my education in Germany. So I finished high school, which in Germany is at the very end, the Abitur, which is the qualification to enter university. And this was in 2001. And then in 2001, I got into the psychology program at the University in Mannheim to study psychology. And I did this still in the old German system, which was the psychology diplom. It doesn't exist anymore, so you can't Google it, or it doesn't work and you can't have it anymore. So it's gone, but now it's everything is bachelor and master's as Europe-wide. But back then it was a diplom, and you would qualify at the end with a diplom, which is an equivalent to a master's. So I did that. And while I still was studying in my undergrad years, after the first exam that I did in learning and memory, my professor actually approached me and said, so I know you're only in second year now, but I want you to leave the University of Mannheim with a doctorate. I'm like, what? Okay. And he's like, yeah, I want to take you on, and you want to continue, you will continue, and you will finish your studies with a doctorate. I'm like, wow, well, that's a big goal, but okay, let's see. And it actually happened that way. So basically, I did my master's equivalent, and afterwards I started my PhD project at the University of Mannheim. I actually attended the graduate school in Mannheim, which is one of the kind in Germany, where I studied psychology alongside with people from sociology and political science. So it's a social sciences graduate school. And in that school, I basically graduated then with a doctorate in 2010.
And what was your research in for listeners?
So for my PhD, I looked at space practice and specifically at the underlying cognitive processes that contribute to that effect. So looking at whether this effect is due to better storage of the material, better maintenance of the material, or better retrieval of that material. So in psychology, in cognitive psychology, you can distinguish all those different processes. So it could be that you are able to store information better, but then later on it's really hard for you to retrieve it because you don't have the right cues, for example, to get this information out of your memory. And so I looked into that. I ran studies, experiments in the laboratory, but also a field experiment, which was really exciting, in a sixth graders. So they studied vocabulary pairs and at different points in time, and had a final test. And then I looked at what distribution of practice was both most beneficial and most importantly, why.
Okay, so, fascinating. Next question, we talked about this earlier off record about you wanting to do a research type role with a teaching part in terms of working at the university here. Did you ever consider being a teacher at any point?
So, no, because in Germany it's a completely different path that you have to go to actually become a teacher.
Okay.
So it's a very specific path that you have to decide at the very beginning, and then you cannot move from that path to right. some other. So it's basically very restricted. But when I was still studying and doing my PhD, I was given the opportunity to teach, to do my first seminars, because in Germany you actually can teach seminars to students when you're doing your PhD.
Okay.
And so this already gave me a huge advantage to experience teaching at a very early stage in my career. And back then I already won a teaching award for the best seminar in an entire year of in psychology. And I'm an enthusiastic teacher, and I care about my students, and I want them to progress. And this is something that highly motivates me when I plan my lectures.
So what career achievement are you most proud of to date?
Difficult question. I think at the stage I'm right now, it is that my work and my activities, for example, through social media, through the workshops I give to teachers on best or effective learning strategies, that my work is making a difference for students and for teachers. And this is, I think, I'm most proud of.
Great.
Right now I'm teaching a service learning module here at the University of Dundee, where students in their last year of their studies, the fourth year, they are taught all the different learning strategies, the theories behind the strategies, different findings, and based on that new knowledge, they create how to study tutorials for pupils in local schools. They go to the local schools and they teach pupils, and seeing basically those students achieve this and become teachers for a while, based on the knowledge that I basically taught them, this is a huge achievement as well.
Yeah, fantastic. It makes it very fulfilling, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
If you could change one thing in education, though, what would it be? Whether it's academic or for teachers in the classroom, you choose.
Okay, I think what I would change after talking to many, many teachers is the mindset that it is okay to do professional development partly in their free time. So I went to give a workshop a couple of weeks ago in a school, and they have put together a completely new committee for learning and teaching. And they want me to come in and basically explain what they could be looking into, what kind of research and so on. And so when I sat with those eight teachers, the first thing I stated is like, I'm assuming that you have been allocated time to do this. Mm. And there was like silence in the room and nervous movement and laughter. And I'm like, okay, because, and the head teacher was there too. And I said, because then I have one message for the head teacher first, because before they have some time allocated for this, there's no way that you will be able to make any big changes.
Yeah.
Because the problem is to look into research, to translate specific research findings into best practice. This requires time. Mm-hmm. And this requires a committee that is, that's a good step to have a committee for that. But a committee that has actual realistic time to do and engage in those activities.
And in schools that requires funding, so you have to protect that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a real challenge for a lot of schools. The slight focus of the podcast is celebrating 100 years of the women's vote in the UK. Could you share an opinion what that might mean to you as a female educator?
So for me, obviously back then it was the first step to a better world, where there's more equality and also that work done by women is rewarded as such.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about this now and where we are right now, currently, we are not at a stage where we can say there is this equality or the same treatment has been reached. So there's a lot to do. The reason why I say this is that I'm on social media, particularly Facebook, I'm part of different support groups for women in academia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge group. It's like a group with thousands of women.
Right.
And on a daily basis, there are so many posts. And on these posts, you are displayed the problems that women in academia are still facing.
Right.
So work not being awarded the way it should, time not being allocated for the work they do, and examples of differential treatment between women and men. And I think the advantage we have nowadays is that we have such groups where we can share those stories and help each other. And this is what happens. So story is shared and everyone contributes, like, what can I do in this situation? Mm-hmm. How can I make myself more visible?
Mm-hmm.
And so things are getting better, but still it's a long way to go.
So in that context, the life and opportunities that, let's just say, female academics now have, where would you like it to be in the next 100 years or 10 years?
Taken seriously for the work we're doing. Women are usually the ones who sign up for all kind of volunteer tasks, all kind of admin, like in the university, for example. If you have a group of academics sitting at a table, you usually have the same women always volunteering for specific tasks that no one wants to do. And I think a couple of weeks ago, I actually read a blog post on particularly that problem.
Right.
And I think going forward, I would like this to change so that for such tasks that are basically important, for example, for university, that they happen, mm-hmm. that this is distributed equally.
And I guess we want to get the place where it doesn't need to be discussed because it's commonplace. If you could pass on one piece of advice to teachers to then pass on to girls in classrooms about whether it's about the academic world or the issues that we've just discussed about having your voice heard and equal opportunities, what would it be?
I mean, for girls, I think there is still the issue of a decrease in interest in STEM, mm-hmm. in STEM subjects after a certain age. So when children are, I know, 8 or 7 or years old, you don't really see a difference between boys and girls. Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes you even see that girls outperform boys in tasks regarding STEM exercises and so on, and performance. And after that, it basically turns around.
Right.
Yeah, and so. So there, something happens there socially that seems to discourage girls.
Okay.
And so I think for teachers to find a way to focus on this for as kind of to do some research around this topic. Okay, mm-hmm. what is it? What discourages students, young girls in STEM, for example, mm-hmm. And what can be done to counterbalance?
Quick fire questions to finish off. It's your last supper. Which what would be on the menu, and which three famous women, dead or alive, would you have sitting with you?
Okay, I can think of two women.
Okay, two
my last. So do you want to know what I'm going to eat?
So what's the menu first of all?
So it's going to be beef. It's going to be bloody. I like meat. I'm half Brazilian, so I think that's why. That it's going to be meat with rice and brown beans.
Lovely. And who's at the table?
So at the table it would be, maybe I can think of three people. It would be Marie Curie.
Uh-huh.
It would be Janis Joplin.
Okay.
And it would be my mom.
Okay. And a quick reason why?
So I'm a huge music fan, and I love the music by Janis Joplin. I think she didn't live long enough for mm-hmm. her actually to show everything that she could do.
Mm-hmm.
Many of her songs have depths, and I would like to ask her about some of the
mm-hmm.
songs.
Okay.
Marie Curie, I recently bought a biography of hers. I still need to read it, so I just bought it. And she's a fascinated woman, balancing life at home, balancing life in academia, winning Nobel Prizes in two disciplines that has never done before, happened before. So. She's a huge role model.
Mm-hmm. And mother?
And mother. because I would like my mother to meet those other two.
Right, fantastic. So, Carolina, what book are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Never Let Me Go by Katsuo Ishiguro.
Okay, and what's it about?
It is about a story of teenagers, so it's like a flashback. So a woman describes her life in a school
mm-hmm.
Where she went to, and they're all there for a specific purpose that develops, it's a very dark purpose that develops very slowly. And in the school, there are specific rules that need to be obeyed, though they're not allowed to leave that school. And they are all brought there as kids because it unfolds at some point that they are donators.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very dark story. And I'm just in the middle of it. So
okay.
I still don't know what will happen.
Right, okay.
But it's a real page turner. And he won the Literature Nobel Prize for it. So.
Right. So Never Let Me Go. So let's we'll check that one out. Which woman would you like us to interview next, and why?
I think you should interview Jana Weinstein because she has a lot to say about academia and transitioning out of academia and reasons why she's doing it and different challenges that come along with it. So I think that would be a
and
good...
And she's based in Boston?
Yes.
Okay, so I know Jana on Twitter, so fingers crossed and get over to Boston, we'll do it remotely, but it's a good excuse for me to get over the sea. okay, thank you. Last question, where can readers find out more about you?
You can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @pimpmymemory.
Okay.
And on my website for the Tile Network.
Okay, and the address for that is? We'll add to the bio. And what's the Learning Scientist, just for listeners, learningscientist.org?
Yes.
.uk?
It's just .org.
.org. Yeah. Okay, thank you for your time, Carolina.
No worries.
Thank you for inviting me up to the university. And thank you to listeners. You're listening to Teacher Toolkit. Find out more on our website and follow on social media using the hashtag TTKit100Women. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Teacher Toolkit. You can find out more about 100 Years, 100 Women on our website, teachertoolkit.co.uk, or follow us on social media using the hashtag TTKit100Women.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.